You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Today's episode of the show is going to be on free agency and all the stuff that's happened. It's been an eventful first 24 hours. It's actually 25 hours as I'm recording this of NBA free agency. A lot has happened. The NBA has had a lot of things get done, and the Nuggets have had a lot of things get done, and that's where I want to start off. First of all, the biggest news of free agency, none of this is really that big of a surprise, but Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets have agreed, have agreed to a max extension, $148 million over 5 years, spread out over 5 years. The Joker will be in Denver for the next five seasons. Again, not a surprise. We knew this was coming. The rumors had been out there, but when we saw it not just get done, but get done within the first minutes of free agency, get that report get leaked. I knew all along this was Denver's plan. Just from talking to people in the organization, Tim Conley even publicly has said that's the high priority. That's the first thing we're going to get done. But to see it get done just that quickly, I think, is a really, really nice thing. Jokic, I have said this since really sometime during his rookie season, probably sometime around March or so of his rookie season. I don't remember when the first time I was really on this bandwagon. Of course, it's Summer League. His first year, I was quick and early on to him as a player, him being somebody that's more than just a second-round talent. But it wasn't really until the end of his rookie season, after he went on that run, that you kind of realized, okay, this guy actually could be a foundational piece. And really in his second season, I mean, I was fully on board, hook, line, and sinker on the Jokic train that first season. But really that second season and after December 15th, the famous date when Denver took off, that's when you knew this guy wasn't just, okay, he's a good player, he's a part of the core, but, you know, he might be the best player that Denver has had in 10 years, maybe more than that. And he has that kind of upside, in my opinion, more than that. I mean, I think he has a chance to go down as the greatest Nugget of all time. So it's been a while that I have felt this way. So, but I think fans have kind of slowly, at least here in Denver, has kind of slowly caught on. There's still the skeptics, and I think a lot, you know, the more you watch the games, I think the less skeptical you are, but there's still people that I think until Denver makes a playoffs or wins a playoff series or until he makes an all-star team or whatever, you know, won't buy in. But I think a lot of people kind of see that he's not just a great player. He is, you know, he is a max player, and he is not just a part of a core, but the building block of a core. So I'm so happy to see him locked up. He's worth every penny of that $148 million. Think about Jokic. Yesterday was worth, you know, maybe $10 million he had made in his career, or, you know, significantly less. I don't know what his contracts were like in the Adriatic League. So maybe he'd made, let's see, one, three, four and a half, probably $7, $8 million in his career to now $148 million. Just kind of a cool story. He's a unique player, and the potential is limitless. I think on the night that the report first came out that Denver was agreeing to the terms, not on free agency. I mean, there's kind of layers to these types of things. And I guess even now we can only say the deal is like 99% done, since I don't think you can put pen to paper until this, you know, just yet. But, you know, Denver, they got a unique player. I put out all the stats. Andy Bailey was putting some of these out. He ranked top five in RPM, real plus minus, which to me is the my favorite advanced stat. You know, he's just a list of names that have accomplished this, at least the statistical accomplishments that he's come to at this point of his career. It's a very, very short list, and it's all Hall of Fame caliber players. So Jokic, and then the other thing is this is an era of unique players and unique styles that work. I mean, we look at Draymond Green and Steph Curry and how unique they, even Kevin Durant, how unique they are, and how it's difficult to sort of scheme for players when they're the only player in the league that can do these certain things. Well, Jokic is as unique from a skill set standpoint. He's as unique as any player in NBA history, really, if you think about it. And this is why his name is, when you talk about, oh, no player has had the points, rebounds, assists, and shooting percentages him, it's because he has such a unique combination of skills. You don't see centers that are the best passers on a team, but also are great shooters, also can post up and then also happen to be great rebounds. You just don't, or great rebounders. You don't see that combination. And I think part of what's exciting about Denver is it's not one of those things where you're going to, they're so unique that it's not like you're going to be able to approach them. If they can reach their ceiling, you're not going to be able to approach them conventionally. They're going to move the game forward. And I think that's part of what's so exciting with having Jokic here in Denver. I also think he's a very Denver-type player. He's not, as we see the era of superstars and the era of guys who want more and more exposure, Jokic seems content with his role here in the Mile High City. A small market in NBA terms, it's a small market. Just in terms of market size and population, it's not. But just in terms of how it's viewed in the NBA, a smaller market. But Jokic is a guy that, you know, I think at least at the moment is content with that, and for the next 5 years will be content with that. So for me, Denver got their guy. It's great to see this extension. And it's great to see that the Denver Nuggets will have an identity built around Nikola Jokic for the foreseeable future. I think Nuggets fans have already bought into that. I think this upcoming season can be, in a lot of ways, a special one, and I think it's going to be defined by the year that Nikola Jokic truly took over from the jump, took over ownership of this team. Perhaps the more interesting deal, at least for Nuggets fans, because it was the most, there was more uncertainty around it, was the Will Barton extension, or I should say the new contract for Will Barton. Thrill signs a deal for 4 years, $53 million. It had been reported at 54, but it's $53 million. I believe an average of $13.25 million per year. Locked up for 3 years with a fourth year of a player option. So Barton will be in Denver for at least 3 years, assuming he's not traded. And this is an interesting one. I want to start by saying I absolutely am Team Barton, Team Will the Thrill. He seems to be one of the more polarizing players on the Nuggets roster right now. And I'm telling you, I've watched the game closely and for long enough to see the sort of ebb and flow of fan base relationship to their players. And Will Barton is always the guy, the type of guy, the player that is in Will Barton's role is always the guy that becomes polarizing. I think Nuggets fans are going to, here's a prediction I'll get to a little bit later. I think Nuggets fans are going to come around to Will Barton more in this upcoming season than they have in the previous several. And I think fans really liked Will when he first got here from Portland. He brought a style and swagger and this cool story. I think Nuggets fans, they went through a little bit of a lull. I think he became the scapegoat. People think of him as selfish and all these different things, you know, low IQ, whatever. I think it's ridiculous. I think he was in a position that was not a good one for him. Not necessarily not a good one for him. I think he did a great job at it, but it was a thankless job. I mean, being a starter, being off the bench, being asked to score, being asked to play point guard, which he's probably never played in his life. You know, all these different things. I've seen this story so many times, and I've seen Nuggets fans, or NBA fans rather, turn on guys like this. Nuggets fans, just take a deep breath, give it a chance. That's all I'm going to say. Give it a chance. I think Nuggets fans are going to love Will Barton this next year. I am absolutely glad that he is back. For starters, he is loved by everybody on the team. Barton is a guy that, you see that you need these guys on teams. There's this Nuggets locker room is really a strange one. I think they've all kind of, because they've grown through the ranks together, and they've grown closer over the years. Guys like Gary and Jamal and even Nikola, like these guys have grown together. But Will Barton is that glue. He's that guy that's like friends with everybody, jokes around with everybody. He's the glue. I can't imagine that Nuggets locker room next year without him, if he wasn't there. I just can't imagine what that would have been like. I think it would have been, in some ways, just the locker room. Just talking about locker room dynamics, I think Will's absence would have been strange. So I'm glad to see that. He is a... I'll save that for a second. The price tag was a bit higher than I hoped, and I've talked about this for several weeks. I thought, with the market drying up how it had, I was hoping that Denver can keep Barton for less than what they offered earlier in the season when they offered him the extension that he turned down. I think 4 years at $11 million per year. I was hoping they can get him for maybe 8.5, the mid-level exception number, that 8.5 number, somewhere in there. And I was hopeful that the market would dry up. I have heard from multiple different reporters that Indiana was very aggressive with him and had a deal in place sliding to him for more than for more money than what Denver offered, and that Will took a little bit of a haircut just to return to Denver, which I think is, again, being a Nuggets fan, you've seen this story so often where players leave Denver and take less money just to leave. Him taking reported, again, this is just things I'm hearing on, like, word on the street, not from official sources, but from other reporters, that he has taken a haircut to stay in Denver. I mean, to me, you got to appreciate that type of thing. And I know that at the end of the season this last year, Will Barton, he, as much as anybody on this Nuggets roster, was more open than anybody about how important this season was to him and how he got here. It was a team stuck in the mud, which is true. He got here the season before Nikola Jokic, Gary Harris's rookie season. And he has been here every step of the way for this rebuild. He showed up as a young player, and even though he's older than the rest of this group, he grew with this team just like everybody else. And I think had the Nuggets made the playoffs this year, I think it would have been a little bit easier for him to leave and just go chase the money. I think he liked it here no matter what, so maybe he would have always stayed. But I think there's this feeling with Barton, you want guys like this. There's a feeling of unfinished business here in Denver, and I think all the players feel it, but none more than Will Barton. The losses, the tough losses at the end of the season that knock him out, nobody felt that harder than Will Barton. You know, he wears his emotions on the sleeve. He cares. So I'm happy, even though the price was a little bit higher than I had hoped. You know, I'm glad when I heard the announcement and saw the number, I was still happy. It was still like a positive feeling of like, okay, thrills back. I think Denver is a playoff team next year. I think that's not a surefire thing. I mean, injuries happen, all this stuff, but I think Denver is one of the most talented teams in the NBA right now, probably a top seven most talented team in the NBA. I'd have to go through a list to actually count them off. And Barton is a really, really, really big part of that. So I'm excited to have him back in the fold. And then I've talked to people about whether they think his contract is tradable in year 3 and 4. And the consensus is it'll probably be market value, which I think is good. That means, yeah, it's a tradable contract. People maybe aren't going to be jumping to take it on, but they won't, you know, if there's a team that needs him, they will take him. It's not like he'll have to attach an asset to him, assuming a regular growth curve, meaning if he's more or less the same player he is now, which I think is expected, he's kind of reached his prime. He'll probably become a slightly better at certain things, but he'll more or less be this type of player. That's my own opinion. And it will be a tradable contract. So Denver, I think, in position now to succeed next season and get into the playoffs and maybe even make a little bit of some noise there. But they'll also be able to move him if that's the direction they want to go. Or you can move Gary Harris and have Will Barton as, I think, a starting caliber small shooting guard. So that's another option. Of course, Gary Harris, I think, a better player, but Will Barton on a cheaper contract. So all this stuff is good. And I'll say this. I am a huge fan, more so than anything. I am a huge fan of Will Barton starting next season. And it sounds like part of this, you know, he's talked about how important it was to have a starting job next year. I am absolutely thrilled with the idea of Will Barton being the starting small forward next season. I know a lot of people think this is crazy and, oh, he can't guard. First of all, Nuggets aren't guarding anybody. This is the Nuggets roster. They can be a top 20 defense, and maybe that's the goal, is to be a top 20 defense. But their best lineups, when you look at net rating, all that matters is, do you outscore your opponents or do you hold them? At the end of the day, is the scoreboard in your favor? And when you look at it, when Barton is starting, and when he is alongside the Nuggets' best players, the Nuggets are incredible. This Barton is a Nikola Jokic-type player. Not only are they friends, not only do they get along, Jokic is always joking and pretending to be Will Barton. He clearly idolizes the guy, like, as a person, like, just loves his style. This feels like a Jokic's team more so than any point, not just because he signed this max extension, although that's obviously a huge part of this, but, you know, Gary Harris is a Jokic guy and Will Barton is a Jokic guy. Those guys are both Jokic guys. I think Jokic ball is here to stay. I know a lot of people have talked about, oh, Barton goes off script and becomes selfish. I think that a lot of that has to do with the different roles he had to play and carrying bench units and this and that. When he plays along and starts alongside Nikola Jokic, those guys have a great two-man synergy going on. And here's some numbers to back it up. Will Barton, Paul Millsap, Nikola Jokic, as a trio, played 500 minutes together, had a plus 11 net rating. That's plus 11, by the way, is nuts. Plus 4 would be good. Plus 7, 8 is like great. Plus 11 is you're killing teams. You're murdering teams. Barton, Millsap, Jokic, 500 minutes, plus 11. This one's even better. Jokic, Murray, Harris, Barton. So basically your three best perimeter players plus Jokic had an offensive rating of 121.7 in over 600 minutes. So you're talking about big sample sizes, guys. Huge sample sizes with Barton alongside the players you love, Jokic, Murray, Harris, and they are awesome. I think that, and then I've talked about this before, but the Jokic, Murray, Harris, Barton, Millsap lineup only played like 62 minutes and absolutely murdered teams. I think part of what was so frustrating about last season was, you know, and injuries played a huge part of this, but the Nuggets never got to what I thought were their best lineup, or rarely got, not frequently enough got to the lineups that I think are their best. They're going to be starting what I think is their best five-man lineup, and your starting group gets just a ton of minutes. By nature of them starting every game, starting every second half, playing 5 minutes together in both halves, and then they likely will finish games together with those lineups as well. So I am excited, guys. This is, to me, this is the Nuggets finding the right five-man rotation, and going into a season, they have their five-man rotation already in there. And it's not just that lineup. If you talk about, okay, well, then what do you do with the bench? You swap Paul Millsap with Mason Plumlee and put Mason Plumlee at the four, or however you want to call it, Jokic at the four, whatever. Put Mason Plumlee in Paul Millsap's spot. The team only had 87 minutes, but they had a plus 16 net rating. And once again, their offensive rating was 125. It consistently, you can put whoever you want at that power forward position and they're going to be really, really good. I think Jared Vanderbilt, of course, this is getting way ahead of ourselves because I don't think Vanderbilt will be playing NBA minutes next year, but maybe he will. But just projecting forward, he's another guy you could slot in, and I think he fits the style of play that Barton brings as that fourth. Barton becomes sort of a fourth option on offense, and he's a heck of a fourth option on offense. I think it's awesome. So Denver will play their best lineup. I think they're going to be stuck in Jokic ball much more than at any point last season. Not that Wilson Chandler was a guy that wasn't a great Jokic ball player, but Barton, a better shooter, better playmaker, more aggressive, more assertive, and I just think the ball's going to be popping next year. So I'm excited. The deal, again, the numbers may be a little bit higher, but I'm very excited to have Thrill back. Going to wrap up with some notes here. I missed the LeBron James sweepstakes rumors, all of these things. And look, there's been talk. We covered it at Denver Stiffs. I talked about it on the show once. I never felt like there was anything to those rumors, and I poked around. The reason I didn't, you know, really stoke this fire wasn't because I didn't find it interesting or compelling or any of those things. It's just when you ask around, you get the same answer of like, yeah, I don't know. You know, like, oh, Denver could be interested, but I think LeBron has his mind made up. We found out today that was true. LeBron signed with the Los Angeles Lakers. I think it would have taken a miracle to pry LeBron away from there, not just from Denver, but from anybody. So Denver had interest. They made it known that they were interested, but even they knew it was a really long shot. I personally don't know what the value was of Denver leaking that they were going after LeBron James, other than I can only speculate twofold. Actually, I could speculate a couple different things. One, you know, it sends a signal to Nuggets fans that, hey, we're being aggressive. I know when they pursued Dwayne Wade, people were very excited about that. So with the LeBron thing, people were excited as well, and they like to hear that you're swinging for the fence there. I think not knowing LeBron's plans, and of course today he signed a 4-year deal with the Lakers, which doesn't necessarily take LeBron out for his career. His career could extend beyond 4 years, and I think there's a pretty good chance that it will. But it almost certainly extends him beyond, you know, I thought going into it, maybe LeBron would sign like a 1-year deal or 2-year deal somewhere. And maybe Denver just wanted to plant that seed of like, hey, look, this is our team. And then 2 years from the down the road, you kind of come back to that and say, oh, by the way, remember we talked about this? Look at how good our team is now. I thought maybe that was the plan. But LeBron signing a 4-year deal kind of squashes that. So And then just to build goodwill, again, around the league, you meet with the most powerful player in the game and you pump up your players. Maybe he sends out the tweet like Dwayne Wade, you wowed me, or whatever. You know, that kind of stuff can be a positive. So outside of those things, I never felt like Denver had a realistic shot. It was always a Hail Mary, and I think the front office knew that. So the LeBron rumors were fun, I think, for fans for a few days, but that ultimately was squashed. What's not squashed is the Western Conference, which maybe the NBA is going to abolish conferences, conference seeding in playoffs. I hope that they do, because this has been a storyline basically my entire life about how much better the West is than the East. When you know, there's always one or two good teams in the East, but then in the West, there's always seven or eight good teams, sometimes nine or ten. No, that will not be true any more than it will be in this upcoming 2018-19 season, where the 10th and 11th best team in the Western Conference would probably be the third or probably the fourth or fifth best team in the Eastern Conference. That's not an exaggeration. A team can win 50 games next season and not make it into the Western Conference playoffs, whereas a team could probably win like 36 games in the Eastern Conference and make it in. So more so than any time. And it's not just that. It's also the star power. You know, the NBA is a star league, and they want, especially in the playoffs, to really pump the revenue. If you are having Hassan Whiteside and Goran Dragic as your like marquee guys in the first round versus the Western Conference, where you might have Anthony Davis miss the playoffs in the first round, like, you, at some point you have to say, you know what, it's healthier for the league. So with LeBron heading west, and the Lakers presumably becoming, the Lakers have filled their team out very bizarrely, but they're going to be a playoff team. I mean, LeBron James just doesn't miss the playoffs, even with the with a weird roster. They're going to be a playoff team, and they're going to be a challenger. So the West gets even more loaded, and Denver's road to not just becoming a contender, but just making it into the playoffs has gotten significantly harder. I think Denver will be a much better team next year, and I think they're very likely to make the playoffs, but you know, it should be noted that the West gets tougher and tougher. Lastly, I want to talk about summer league practice. Today was unique. We always get to go in and see practice. And even in summer league, we get to see the practice, but today we got to watch about 10 minutes of live ball scrimmage, which I was very appreciative of. We rarely get to see that type of intensity in workouts and see behind the curtain. So it was a lot of fun. I'll talk a little bit more about the players in a second, but Michael Porter Jr. was in attendance watching the practice, as was Jared Vanderbilt, which is good to see. Vlatko Kankar not in attendance. He will be arriving, I believe, on Tuesday or Wednesday. So he will be with the Summer League team. He will play in Summer League, but because he has a game coming up here in a few hours with the Slovenian national team, he will not be for most of this camp. The scrimmage, of course, 10 minutes, it was fun to watch, but you don't really get to read too much out of that. But I wanted to go through this by ranking who I think are the most interesting players on Denver's Summer League roster. And I'm going to start with my number one, who's Monte Morris. To me, there's no player I am more interested in watching at Summer League than Monte Morris. First of all, I'm Team Monte. I believe in Monte Morris. I think he can be really good. His problem, in my mind, his problem as a basketball player are purely his size. He's worked on that. He's added some weight to his body to try to be able to defend and be a little bit stronger. But he's just, his frame is slight and slender, and he's not that tall. But everything about his game, I think, is just great for what you need out of a backup point guard. And I'm excited to see what he can do. I kind of get the sense that this is sort of proving ground. This is his opportunity. I kept wondering. He was in the G League last year, and he did great. You know, Houston, he went to Houston's Rio Grande Valley Vipers team, and they had two of their own prospects at point guard on that roster. Monte Morris still dominated those games. Think about how impressive that is, that he was able to go down there. They had Briante Weber. I don't remember who the other guy that they had, but he was able to not just break into the rotation, but be the best player on the floor. I'm very high on Monte Morris, and he's the guy I have my eyes fixated on. And I want to share this Jordy Fernandez quote, because I should mention Jordy Fernandez coaching Summer League. Really interesting guy, fast riser in the NBA world, did some coaching in Europe for a while, went over to the Canton Charge G League team for the Cavs, was the head coach there and had some success. He's a very, very well-respected young coach who I think is sort of a name to keep out in terms of fast rising young coaches who could be head coaches someday. He gets his first chance at coaching Summer League. He's full of positive energy. And I'll say this about Jordy. You get different things from different coaches. I loved Mike Inori. He was great, quote, really nice, personable guy. I really enjoyed talking to him. Jordy, what I pick up on from him, in addition to being insightful and direct and all these things, he seems direct. Some of the questions we asked today and some of the quotes he gave were pretty sharp. And I'll play a couple for you here. First one on Monte.
What are you expecting out of Monte over these next couple weeks?
Just to be solid and prove that he's an NBA player. Show everybody in our club that he can run a team. He's really good at playing pick and roll. He can finish at the rim, and he'll guard full court and put pressure and change the game.
From what you've seen, do you think he can be the rotation guy next year?
Of course, yeah. I believe in him, and I've told him, and that's why we have certain things in place for him.
And he talked a lot just now about, you know, it feels like every day we were in the gym for those pre-draft workouts. He was the guy that was working kind of by himself afterwards. So what type of progress have you made to see from him in the past couple months since the season ended?
Yeah, it's just, you're right. It's not a matter of 5 days. He's been working really, really hard to be where he is right now. He gained weight. He's been in the weight room. He's been working on his game. So overall, you got to give him a lot of credit. And it just showed today.
So the thing I take away from that interview, more so than anything else, is that the staff, not just Jordy, but the entire Nugget staff seems to be looking at Monte Morris in this summer league and looking at it as an evaluator. This is his chance, so to speak. He worked all last year. He went through college. He worked all last year to kind of get to this point, and this is his shot. He's got a little bit of pressure on him to sort of prove to the Nuggets. I suspect Denver will probably, again, this is just me trying to read the tea leaves, it's not me reporting, but I suspect Denver will likely enter summer league without a backup point guard. I suspect if Monte Morris plays well, he will be the backup point guard. I suspect if he doesn't play well, Denver might look to add point guards you can find, especially backup point guards. Denver might look to add one, if they don't feel confident with how he performed in the summer. So his time is now to kind of go out there and prove it. And that's why, to me, he's the most interesting player here. Again, undersized, but he's a guy that I think is going to do his job. He's going to be a guy that I don't think Nuggets fans will notice too much, but in a good way, because he's not a guy that's going to be making mistakes. He's going to get the ball to the guys that need to get the ball, and I think he's very capable of running a second unit. I'm curious to see how he can run the summer league team. Number two for me is Malik Beasley. He's a guy that, unlike for Monte, this is sort of his first shot. I feel like for Malik Beasley, in a way, this is his last shot with the Nuggets. This is his opportunity now to sort of prove who he is, prove who he can be. And we've seen a little bit of all the players on the roster, the Summer League roster, he has by far the most NBA experience. I have been pretty low on Malik Beasley, and if you've listened to the show, you've heard that over the years, that I haven't seen what I think the high upside with him, and including last year's summer league. But for now, he enters it as the best player, best scorer. But what are the Nuggets looking for him? I asked Jordy that same question, and it seems like consistency is the key buzzword for him. Here's what he had to say.
Well, Malik Beasley, what do you hope he puts on the court in the summer league?
Just very consistent games over and over. That's what I want from him. His energy has been really good. He's been working hard as well. He's been in and out of town, and every time he's been here, it looked really good. He looks in shape. He was competitive. He was happy at the end of practice. It's not always going to be pretty, and sometimes we'll struggle, but their positive attitude is the only thing that I care.
With Malik, is it important to try to give him a similar role to what he'll have at the NBA level since he has NBA experience, or does he take on more of a high usage role in summer league?
I mean, in my opinion, he'll play more minutes, it's obvious, right? But the things he has to do and what he has to show the front office, us coaches, head coach, he'll has to show that whatever he does in summer league applies to what he's going to do with the Nuggets, with our varsity team. So he's open, he's got to catch and shoot, one dribble, get to the rim, he's got to guard, be consistent, do it over and over and over and over for as many games as he plays.
I really like that answer, and because it really highlighted what they're looking for him. And I think Beasley's a guy who, you know, he's really young, and I think he was young at heart, and somewhat happy-go-lucky. It's just his personality, positive person. But the flip side of that can be that I think he can be a bit of an inconsistent young player, because he doesn't. I don't think in his first two seasons he's taken the game as seriously and just has that sort of intensity and focus that is required. And I kind of heard that in Jordy's words about, look, if he's going to hang around in this league, and especially hang around on this team for further than this summer, he's got to be a guy that can show he can play 32 minutes a night. Not that he's going to play that for the Nuggets, you know, anytime soon, but he can play 32 minutes a night here over summer league and consistently execute the defensive game plan, consistently knock down the shots and get to the spots he's supposed to, and just execute. And to me, that's kind of my scouting report on him as well, and what I'm hoping to see from him as well. You see the flashes of upside, but he just seems like a player that you don't know what you're going to get from him, and a guy that makes sort of like low-level mistakes with too much frequency. So I'm excited for Malik Beasley, although a little bit more cautious optimism. Player number three, Tyler Lydon. Lydon had a horrible summer league last year. One of the worst. I interviewed him. I tried to interview him after like every game, and I couldn't get him. He was in such a bad mood. He was talking to who I presume was his agent or trainer or somebody that he was giving him advice, and he just shot poorly. He played poorly. He didn't really do a lot of positive things, and you could tell he wore the stress of those performances on his shoulders, and I think also the stress of, look, he was a surprise pick. I think he probably knows that. I'm excited for the Tyler Lydon redemption tour this summer. I hope that's what happens. He's rehabbed from the injury. He was out on the court tonight. I want to see what kind of player he is, and if he can, if he can show some flashes of potential. In the G League, he looked a lot better than he did in summer league. He knocked down shots. He put up some stats. He had some block shots. One of the things I have a question about is Juancho Hernangómez, Tyler Lydon. At the moment, I have this very positive impression of Juancho Hernangómez, although he's sort of like Malik Beasley. He's sort of in that it's time to find out who he is moment. But if Tyler Lydon is a facsimile for Juancho, that makes Denver's decision much easier. I hear he is, and his scouting report coming out of college makes him awfully similar, but we just haven't seen that so far. So he's the third most interesting player for me. Fourth, Kenrick Williams. I'm excited about him. Last year it was Torrey Craig as sort of the unknown name to keep an eye on. I think Kenrick Williams is the guy that I'm very excited, because he was a high-level player at TCU. For four-year player, high basketball IQ. He's got NBA length. He's like 6'7". You know, kind of he can guard multiple positions. He's smart. He's not going to blow you away with any one skill, but he's going to be a guy that can do a little bit of everything. So he was not drafted. I believe he was a guy that Denver had their eye on and really, really liked him. I think they liked Vanderbilt just a little bit better, so they went after him. But he was a guy that they added to the summer league team pretty quickly after the draft. And he's a guy that Denver doesn't necessarily have roster spots for him, but he's a guy that maybe can have a Torrey Craig type moment. Remember, nobody entered summer league last year thinking Torrey Craig is going to be a Denver Nugget next year, even a two-way player or whatever. Kenrick Williams is a guy that could be that guy, and I think he's a guy that could show out in summer league and be really, really good. Number five, Thomas Welsh, of course, the other Nuggets, the only Nuggets drafty from this season that's playing on the summer league team. I'm curious to see what he does. He seems to me like a guy that could be very, very good in summer league. He's skilled. Even watching the scrimmage today, he had a really nice pass, just a basic pass, but a good one where he made a quick read on a swing off of a rebound, which I really, really like. So I'm curious to see how he does. Bigs like that who have perimeter-oriented skills can really, especially for a summer league team, can be really, really good for helping out the other players. Like, we want to see how Monte Morris does finishing at the rim, for example, because he's undersized. Well, having a big that can stretch the defense out and bring the rim protector out of the paint, you know, helps with that. Same with Malik Beasley, a guy that can pick and pop. You know, that helps to kind of see what Monte Morris's game is like. Of course, Jokic can pick and pop, so Thomas Welsh can be the summer league Nikola Jokic in a certain way. So I'm curious to see how he does. And then also, just because I've kind of written off Thomas Welsh as a guy that probably will never play in the NBA, but maybe I'm wrong, so I want to see him and see what he's got. And then lastly, Vlatko Kankar. Excited to see him. He was Denver's second-round draft player, who I think most people wrote off as, oh, that's Denver greasing the palms of Jokic's agents and or whatever, you know. But Vlatko Kankar has been really good. He kind of outplayed Juancho Hernangómez, at least on an individual basis, in their meet matchup over the weekend. maybe he's a player. Maybe he's somebody that's kind of like a late bloomer who kind of grown into a player. So I'm just curious to see what he looks like and how he plays. That's it for today, guys. Lots of info in here, but we should have episodes all week. You should be excited. The Nuggets play a game on Friday. We're 4 days away from a Denver Nuggets basketball game. I'm quite excited about that, and there should be lots of more news and rumors. Denver still has to get rid of a lot of salary. I suspect those things will happen within the next couple of days, so there'll be plenty to talk about. Thanks so much, everybody. I'll be back. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.